The next case on our calendar today is A23-1162 in the matter of the welfare of the child of CRH and SM-PH. You may be seated. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. I'll give you a minute to get settled. We are recording the oral argument here today. The recording will be available on our website within approximately 24 hours. The oral argument is also being live streamed via a Zoom link on our website. Counsel for each party will have 15 minutes for your primary argument, and counsel for appellant will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. When you begin your argument, if you can introduce the party you represent and yourself, introduce yourself and identify the party you represent, we would greatly appreciate it. So, counsel for appellant, you can proceed when you're ready.
May it please the court, my name is Creston Gackle, and I'm counsel for the appellant, L.H. L.H. is the now adult sibling of H.H., who is subject to post-permanency proceedings following a voluntary termination of the parent's parental rights in April. L.H. is asking this court to make two essential rulings that are critical to both her due process rights and her rights as HH's sibling. She is asking this appellate court to recognize the sibling relationship, both in general and as to LH and HH, and that it is due special protection under law. The district court found it totally lacked power after the termination of the parents' rights to court order any sibling visitation.
Mr. Gackle?
Yes.
With respect to that argument, could you direct us to the point in one of the district court's orders where you feel that is explicitly stated, because I don't find that explicitly laid out.
Oh, thank you, Your Honor. We did ask the court on a couple different occasions to order sibling visitation. In our initial brief, there are a couple points at which we directly quote the district court, specifically.
And you're talking about in a transcript, correct?
It is, yes, Your Honor.
Is there any order, though, that does indicate the district court concluded that it did not have authority here to order visitation?
Any order? Well, Your Honor, I guess I'm not sure if there was a written order. It was just in the oral order that she declined to order any specific sibling visitation.
Because it does seem that at other points, even if you feel like that was the direction the court was going, there are other points at which the court seems to indicate that it's sort of a matter for later consideration. It doesn't seem like it has definitively concluded that.
Well, in a sense, it hasn't definitively concluded, Your Honor. We think that the district court was fairly clear that it thought it didn't have any power to order sibling visitation post termination of the parents' parental rights, and so it was going to decline to make any specific order, even upon request of LH's counsel, myself. So all we're asking this court to do is tell the district court, look, you've got the power and discretion to order sibling visitation. You don't have to order it, but you do have to look at whether visitation between the siblings would be in HH's best interest. If the court declines to order after analyzing best interest, that's acceptable. If the court does order after analyzing best interest, that's exactly what we're looking for. So we're just asking this court to clarify to the district court, look, you've got the power.
Yeah, I appreciate that. I don't want to spend too much time on this, but I think that's an easier instruction to a district court when they have, you know, express that opinion, which I don't know that they have here. It seemed like it was a subject that could come up at later review hearings.
Thank you, Your Honor. And we would just cite the transcript of the June 15th, 2023 hearing, index number 227, which we quote, on page 5 of our brief, and which the court says she cannot order visitation. She can't order any specific contact. I mean, the other issue, which is sort of muddy in the district court record, is we don't think anything really changed when the parents' rights were terminated as to sibling visitation. The district court seems to think things substantively changed in some way, but there's really no basis for that finding either. All we're asking this court to do is return the matter to district court and say very clearly, you've got the power to order this within HH's best interests. If you choose not to order it, base it on the best interest factors.
Before you get back to your arguments, it's already derailed you. I want to, one more question. The county argues that there's a threshold issue here as to which rules apply, juvenile protection or the adoption. What is your response to that?
At this point, Your Honor, it's a juvenile protection proceeding. That's the way that it's designated within the court record. We don't think, I mean, we're trying to make progress towards an adoption. And by making progress towards that, all that occurs within a juvenile protection proceeding, within what we would call post-permanency proceedings or after a termination of parental rights has gone through. So we're not in any kind of adoption proceeding as far as we're concerned. This is an argument that was raised by the Guardian Ad Litem's counsel and was latched onto by some other parties, but we don't think it really has any basis in law. Adoption rules would begin to apply once an adoption case itself is filed. At that point, we would be, you know, people could be looking at whether there's going to be a contested adoption proceeding. But at this point, 260C and all of those things, all of that occurs within the original permanency file. We think this is even made more clear, as noted in our reply brief. Specifically, the Minnesota Supreme Court recently amended Rule 2.01 to designate or make clear that these progress towards adoption hearings are juvenile protection matters and governed by the rules of juvenile protection procedure. And while we note that this is a recent amendment, we do also note that the Minnesota Supreme Court said it was a clarification or clarifying amendment, which we would submit means there was no substantive change. It was simply to make it very clear to everyone what we were talking about.
Even though the amendment is to take effect January 1?
Yes, Your Honor. We understand that it's not currently in effect. We don't think it's a substantive change.
Language.
It is unusual language, we agree. On the first issue, I mean, we think basically both of these issues are fairly straightforward, Your Honors. On the first issue, we've pointed out both in the briefing on pages 7 to 14 and in our letter that we sent to the district court and other parties in addendum 39 to 41, the very many rule-based and statutory provisions that require the district court to review, and if it is in the child's best interest, speaking of HH, then to order sibling visitation and contact. We have also pointed out on pages 14 to 21 of our initial brief the broad acknowledgement, both within social science law review articles and even as cited by this court, of the importance of the sibling relationship, and that it is foundational to essentially many individuals' happy, healthy, and connected lives.
Counsel,
yes.
I appreciate that point, but you also make an argument based on the Constitution, and I'm wondering, did you make that constitutional argument before the district court?
Your Honor, at this point, we're just asking, the direct answer to your question is no, we did not. At this point, we're just asking the court to this court to tell the district court, you've got the power. It's really important to understand the importance of the sibling relationship, and there are many reasons to support the sibling relationship in general, but that's an argument that we're sort of previewing would be made as part of our argument once the court is told it has the power to order sibling visitation.
Mr. Gackle, can I clarify something on the visitation also? It's a bit confusing to me in the sense of where it's at now. I understand there was a schedule that once the voluntary termination occurred of the parents, that apparently ended, I guess. But yet, there's nothing that prohibits visitation. So is the point that right now it's at the good graces of the foster parents together with your client working out a schedule? And I saw a number of provisions in various orders that there needs to be an enhanced relationship and communication, and et cetera. So is it true visitation is not prohibited, but the point being is there's also no longer the schedule that was previously in place that would obligate the parties to meet?
That's precisely the stance where we are right now, Your Honor. I mean, there were a number of things that the court ordered before that have fallen away because the foster parent is no longer obligated to do them. One of them is meeting halfway because the distance between the homes. Another is disclosure of certain updates on the medical care. Some of these issues, I think, are best left with the district court because they are sort of credibility issues, and that there's a dispute among the parties about exactly what's going on. But it's true at this point, and I think agreed, that there's not a firm schedule right now, and there's not a firm schedule that, there's not an adherence to the schedule that existed before the termination went through, which was essentially meeting halfway in a public place.
Can I follow up with a question about the appointment of counsel issue?
Oh, yes.
Am I correct that the basis under the rule that your client was eligible for counsel derives from once she intervened as a party? And so under Rule 32, which describes the rights of parties, it references the right to counsel in Rule 36. And so that's her method, and I'm assuming that's the reason the court appointed you as counsel for initially, is because she's now a party, not because she fits the definition under Rule 36 of those eligible as a parent or guardian, but because she became a party, and a party has a right to counsel pursuant to that same rule.
Not quite, Your Honor. So the original appointment was based merely on her age and the fact that she herself was a youth subject to child protection proceedings.
I guess I'm thinking of the period once she turned 18 and counsel continued, and she was allowed to intervene as a party, as I recall, because otherwise she was out completely. Isn't that the legal basis upon which the court appointed you as counsel at that point for her? Because otherwise she would not fit, be entitled to appointment of counsel under Rule 36, because she's either a parent or a guardian.
Well, again, Your Honor, it's a little muddy in the record. The way that I was originally appointed was through the public defender based on the age and based on the fact that children over the age of 10 get representation in child protection proceedings. We then moved for her to become a party, and she was entitled to counsel as a result. So my representation, if the court thinks of it as two separate representations, that's fine, but really my representation simply continued from the original point.
So that's my question. As we sit here today, the only basis upon which she would separately have been eligible for appointment under the rules is because she's a party.
Yes, Your Honor, although arguably, I don't know that I would have needed a new appointment. My representation simply continued until any of the provisions of 36.05 would have applied. I personally did not ask for discharge. My client didn't ask for discharge. That would be the normal sort of thing that would happen with a child aging out who does not receive extended foster care and have 19 to 21 representation. But I never, you know, our main point, Your Honor, is that that request has to come from me as her counsel or from her as the client. It can't come from anybody else. On the first issue, you know, we're just asking this court to order the district court does have the power and responsibility to order sibling visitation and contact as may be in HH's best interest. If the court returns the issue to the district court, we would be making a variety of arguments that it is in fact in HH's best interest to have continued contact with my client. LH has been previously recognized on the record. LH and HH have a special relationship that is distinct from any parental relationship and is important to both LH and HH. All that we're asking for is that authorization or indication of power and perhaps some guidance to the district court just on recognizing the importance of sibling visitation in general, though, you know, as Your Honor pointed out, we did not raise at this point at the district court any constitutional issue. On the second issue, which I'm discussing with Your Honor, we note the basic fact that the court case remains open, that there are a variety of motions and certain rights that LH is entitled to litigate, essentially, and that that requires counsel. It remains a juvenile protection proceeding, and neither she nor her counsel have sought discharge. So if the matter is not over, which, again, we don't think it is, and the client is not asking for discharge, and I, as counsel, am not asking for discharge, we think it well beyond the power of the district court to discharge her counsel.
So in your view, what is her LH's party status currently?
She is just a party, Your Honor. I mean, we don't think anything changed. Her rights weren't terminated. Nothing in the termination of the parents' rights adjudicated or finally decided anything related to her rights. We think it's fairly clear in the statute that, you know, a termination of parental rights, that severs the parent-child relationship. It does nothing to sever any sibling relationship. And that's also emphasized throughout the statute, where they keep talking about sibling rights and the right to be adopted together and all of these considerations that the court has to make in post-permanency proceedings that protects the sibling relationship. I see that my time has expired. Thank you.
Thank you. You'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal. Counsel for respondent, you can proceed when you're ready.
Thank you. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. I'm Sean McCarthy for the Rice County Attorney's Office. I appear today on behalf of the respondent in this proceeding. I want to pick up on the things that Judge Hallbrooks and Judge Schleter, you both nailed it here. These are discretionary rulings by the court. The question about that threshold of whether or not is it in the juvenile protection proceeding or are we now in the adoption proceeding, respondent's brief makes that argument because that's what the law said at that time. I will acknowledge and I appreciate counsel pointing out that the committee he's a part of to change the rules effective in January. That's less significant to the outcome in this case. They're clarifying where does the child protection end and where does the adoption begin. And I'll acknowledge there's a little gray area there that was unclear. I didn't find a lot of clear law on it. Judge Schleter, did you have a question?
Yes. Well, in the definition of in 260C.001 subdivision 1B, a child protection proceeding includes, and at 3 is post-permanency, that references 263, 317 through 521, and then 4 adoption proceedings, including post-determination of parental rights proceedings that review the responsible ... up to adoption. So it's a permanency proceeding. Whatever else it might be, it's still a juvenile protection proceeding you are in.
Yes.
So if that's the case, and one of the obligations, well, the two issues here, one of the obligations is for the county to continue to consider the permanency plan, including then reference to 212, and now that's the point Mr. Gackle's making regarding sibling visitation, so that keeps that on the table, obligates it to be on the table. And then we also have, of course, the right of a party to appointment of counsel, so that remains. So when you say discretion, that seems to be the point on the first issue that Mr. Gackle's making, is the court hasn't yet exercised discretion and orally at least seemed to suggest it didn't have any discretion to appoint. And so it sounds like you're agreeing, well, that would be an error. The judge may, decided not to so far, but does have the authority during this permanency proceeding to grant visitation, and the child and the sibling has a right to counsel.
Your Honor, I generally agree with what you're saying, but I'd like to clarify. The judge said more than, we're at the adoption stage, I don't have power. The judge went on to say, even if there was still a juvenile proceeding going on, I'm not exercising my discretion to give court-ordered visitation schedule. The judge is saying, the judge made a specific comment. This is in the transcript. It's cited in respondent's brief. The judge's specific comment was, the appellant was under 18, you know, she was about 16 or 17, I believe, when the CHIPS case first started. 2 years later, the judge made a discretionary decision to upon the motion of appellant to make her a party. She would have aged out at that point. Judge says, I'm going to make you a party. Even though it's pretty unusual, I wouldn't normally, I'm going to do it in this case, and I'm even going to exercise my discretion and give court-appointed counsel at public expense. That was 2.5 years ago. In the 2.5 years since then, and this is the part that's cited where the judge says, even if this was not a juvenile protection proceeding, and it was, or excuse me, even if it was a juvenile protection proceeding, at this point, appellant needs to take, I think the phrase was, take some things on her shoulders and her responsibility and exercise that maturity that comes with where she's at now, because we're in a very different stage, and work out and mend the relationship with the foster parents. Try to work out a way to make this work. That's, I think,
is
what Judge...
Is that an adequate consideration of the best interests of the child?
I think so, Your Honor, because the way in which she described it, it was not only talking about appellant, and it's not appellant's best interests here. The best interest of the child is the protected child, H.H. The appellant in this case is not H.H. Appellant is H.H.'s half-sibling. So where I'm kind of going here is if the court feels that the district court needs to think about this and put something in writing more clearly, you could remand for it to exercise its discretion. To that degree, that appears to be what appellant is asking for, remand so that the district court exercises its discretion. I'd also point out, though, that the district court has incredibly broad discretion in this area. And this court has repeatedly said over and over again, in areas where the trial court judge has very broad discretion, as long as the record shows that the district court considered the question, weighed the relevant factors, and made a choice in its discretion, this court has no need to reverse or command a certain outcome. Instead, you defer to the discretion already exercised. Respondent's position is that the record in this case shows that the two questions, question number one, should there be continued court-ordered sibling visitation on a specific schedule? The court said, hey, it's 2.5 years later. I'm not going to continue that. I want appellant to take some responsibility and work that out with the foster parents, or at least try to work it out with the foster parents. Record doesn't have a lot in it here for you to know what efforts have been tried. It would be a different question, and I would agree that there would probably be need for more action by this court. If there was a very strong record of they tried and tried to work something out and it was at ends, and the district court just said, I'm not touching that. That is not this case. This is a case where the record is replete with lots of references to things that have been attempted. The problem is it's a little muddy. So at this point, the district court had that muddy record in front of it, considered the full factors available to it, and said, I'm exercising my discretion as a trial judge not to continue to do court-ordered visitation. Instead, that can be arranged by agreement of the parties. Give it a try, see if you can work it out.
I just don't find the record to be that clear. But in your argument then, Mr. McCarthy, you're relying on that statement. At this point, I believe appellant as an adult needs to mend the relationship with foster parents. And so
That's the statement I was trying to think of and not saying so gracefully.
Well, that's right in your brief. I appreciate that. But I mean, it doesn't, I mean, it's a statement by the district court, but it doesn't seem to have the clarity that you're presenting us with.
And part of the challenge here, Your Honor, is, as I'm sure you all see working on appeals on a routine basis, this is a trial judge who's had almost 4 years with the case. Mm-hmm. She has an incredibly deep, extensive knowledge of this case and every single 90-day hearing, every single motion, every single step. Key here, though, is the appointment of counsel and the court-ordered sibling visitation schedule. Those are both motions made by appellant. Appellant brought those motions, asked for it, and the judge issued those orders, exercised the discretion to issue those orders. Now we're at a point where we're 2.5 years later. The judge is saying, things are a little different now, and I'm going to change my mind about some of those things. That's, again, exercise of discretion. I will acknowledge that, you know, the record's not as clear. I have the advantage, I think, of all the internal notes that aren't part of the record, and I'm sure that's where my comment is coming from. In the same way, though, those internal notes in my world, that's the memory of our trial judge who's had 4 years of working on this case.
All right, but you appreciate the fact that we have to look at what the record is.
I agree. I mean no disrespect to counsel or this panel in that regard.
But we've got just, you know, the cold orders and, you know, and the transcript.
And perhaps the point I make then is, again, this court has repeatedly said in areas like child protection, where they're very fact-intensive, and I commend counsel for pointing out. This is an area where there's lots of credibility issues, there's some debate back and forth between the parties about who did what or said what. We generally defer to the trial court. There's no need for this court to exercise its discretion to compel a particular outcome. The respondent's position is two steps. Step one, there's no need for this court to reverse anything. And at step two, if you're troubled that there's something lacking here, the most would be to remand for the district court to consider the two questions. Should the court find it's in the best interest to continue court-ordered sibling visitation? And again, best interests of HH, not best interests of appellant, best interests of HH. And then the second question is, should the court continue to allow appellant to be a party with court-appointed counsel at public expense? And the key there, that last phrase, public expense, part of the county attorney's duty is to be a steward for the county financially. If this is a person who was discretionarily granted party status based on their motion initially, and then two and a half years goes by, should they continue to be a party? That's a discretionary question. That's not a you're obligated under the rules question. That's why I said in the very beginning of my argument, this is a these are both discretionary questions. They're not, this court has to reverse a clear legal error. Even if,
yes. On that point about party though, that's done, and there's no request to de-party her, right? So doesn't it just boil down to, if we disagree with your position, if I understood in the brief that this is no longer a permanency proceeding or child protection proceeding, despite that definition in the rule, there's really no discretion then, unless she's no longer financially eligible. I understand that. So would you agree if we disagree with you on what kind of proceeding it is and what it still is, that under the rule she qualifies for appointment of counsel at public expense, again, assuming she's financially eligible. So then that would have been an error to discharge, because neither she nor her attorney asked to be discharged. And it sounds like the judge accepted the argument that under the rules of adoption, there is no such equal right, which that if we were under those rules, I think the judge was correct. But if we're not, then the judge would be incorrect. Would that be a fair of the issue?
I believe so. And one point I'd like to maybe highlight within that issue is at the time of the judge's ruling, at the time of the filing of respondent's brief, there was nothing left to do in the protection proceeding. We were at the point where we're moving forward into adoption. But that point of where does the protection proceeding end and adoption begin? I agree with Your Honor that the rule says, well, it includes post-permanency stuff. But what is post-permanency stuff? What was left to do? They're looking for adoptive parents.
Right,
adoptive permanent placement.
And if she wasn't a party, she wouldn't have a right to counsel, and we wouldn't be talking about it. But until there is an adoption, it's still a child protection post-permanency proceeding, 90 days, review of the case report, and of course she can file motions under the rule and so forth. So that's where we're at, correct?
And I would agree that, especially because the Supreme Court amended the rule to clarify that this does in fact remain a post-permanency case that still fits in the juvenile protection, those rules would apply, in which case if the court feels it needs to, it could remand for the district court to consider the appropriateness of continued party status and continued court-appointed counsel at public expense.
I want to just step back for a minute. With your knowledge of the record, I mean, your point about best interest of HH is, of course, a good one. But can you direct us to anything in this record where the district court talks about the best interests of HH with respect to this visitation?
Every single order from the district court, and I kept reading through them trying to find which one of these was the one where the court first appointed as a party status, which one was the one where the court stated the that I'm setting out a schedule of visitation on a court-ordered schedule. Every single one of those orders looks very identical. It starts off with, here's who the parties are, here's who this is, it lays out the history of the case, and then it goes through the best interest factors and adds in, here's what's changed and here's the next best interest. I did not highlight that in my brief, nor did counsel in appellant's briefs, because that's all the backdrop It's not really something that we saw as being critical at this stage, but I also agree with Your Honor. That is the heart of the best interest analysis. Where is that in the record? It's in this series of the district court's orders leading up to today's case. And that includes a whole bunch of orders that are kind of status checks, every 90-day type orders.
Specific two orders that have been placed.
Correct. Correct. And I'll take some fault for that. If I had the ability to know what an appellate judge wants to know about during every argument, I would write the best briefs ever, but unfortunately, I haven't gotten that good at it yet.
And can I return to, collectively between, and Judge Hallberg started off with an excellent question on the first issue. When I think that both of your answers to it, I'm not so sure there's anything for us to review because there's no order that says specifically what appellant's claiming was the error and the thought process. It was an alternative oral kind of statement. Well, I don't believe I have the authority, but even if I did, I wouldn't order it. It almost strikes me that we don't really have anything to review specifically. Maybe we could comment somehow on it to give direction, but would that be your
position?
That's
the heart of my argument, Your Honor. I frame my issues in the respondent's brief as three issues. The second one was, assuming arguendo, it's still a juvenile protection proceeding. These are discretionary decisions by the trial court, and I would submit that the trial court did weigh the appropriate factors and make a balancing there. This court could say, you know, we're not comfortable. We want a little bit more of best interests. You could direct a remand and ask it to go there. But the problem is you're starting to get into that thin ice area, as Judge Schleter just pointed out, that do we have something that the court did wrong that we need to correct? Or are we just kind of saying, hey, you could have done it a little bit better. Why don't you do it a little bit better? Does that make sense?
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Your Honor, for your time this morning. Thank you, counsel.
Thank you. Appellant, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you. I just want to respond to a few things that were raised, but I'm certainly open to questions. I think, in general, our view of the county's position is it's a bit of revisionist history. In this case, discretion was not exercised post-termination of the parents' parental rights. A best interest review was not conducted. There are lots of things that the district court needs to do, as we pointed out on pages 11 to 12 of our initial brief. That include many things it's supposed to require the agency to review and accomplish, including maintaining those connections, including sibling contact and visitation. At this point, we don't think any motion post-termination was really ruled upon. It was our position that the visitation that was ordered pre-termination was still in effect. The court said, no, I guess it's not in effect. And we pointed out that, you know, there's really no reason why it shouldn't be in effect, to which the court responded, essentially, I don't have the power to order this. We don't think that the court's encouragement to work things out outside of court is in any way an exercise of discretion. It certainly is not an analysis of best interests. It's not a full discussion that the sibling contact really deserves. And we're really only asking this court to tell the district court, look, you've got the power to order it. Analyze the best interests and use your best discretion. We're not asking for anything much more than that. We also want to point out, Your Honors, we can't force the district court to put certain things in its orders, which is why we requested transcripts so that the court's oral orders and analysis could be part of the record. We also want to point out that the discharge of LH's counsel was based in part on the court's idea that there was nothing left for the court to order or grant as any kind of motion relief, which we take considerable issue with. Number one, we think we can make motions to require the agency to fulfill its obligations in post-permanency proceedings, as well as motion for adoptive placement or reconsideration after the agency has issued a notice of adoptive placement. The trial
counsel,
court does.
Can you address respondent's argument that the court exercised its discretion during the June 15, 2023 hearing regarding visitation when it commented, at this point, I believe appellant as an adult needs to mend the relationship with foster parents, and I have some and have some communication and responsibility on her shoulders on following through with that as well, that that was the court's consideration of the best interest in terms of visitation post-permanency.
Thank you, Your Honor. I don't think it comes anywhere close to a ruling or even a best interest analysis. A best interest analysis would consider the strength of the relationship between LH and HH, the history of that relationship, HH's current functioning and needs, the considerations for what visitation could look like. This singular sentence doesn't come anywhere close, and it's, you know, frankly, Your Honor, you know, my client, this is something, frankly, for the district court to understand and for that record to be clarified, but my client has made a lot of outreach and has been rebuffed at many, many turns, and that's the reason why we're trying to get the court to order something very specific or even just continue its order pre-termination, because without that, there's no negotiation going on, and the communication has, frankly, not been productive or respectful towards my client. So it's an issue for the district court, Your Honor, but to be frank, we would not be here if we didn't need an order for visitation. We would not be here if being nice to the foster parent or adoptive parent simply worked things out. And that's part of why we need to analyze best interests more fully on the contact issue. Essentially, we're just asking the court to order a truism, which is that the trial judge needs to analyze the best interests of whether sibling visitation should occur, and that it has the power and discretion to do so. We would point out that reconsideration of party status is not something provided for in the rules and is not something before this court. We'd also point out that when the county points out something about public expense, I'm a public defender. I'm not being paid by the county. I don't think the county has any interest in how I'm being paid. And really, the question of the discharge of counsel is focused on the attorney-client relationship. Does the attorney want to withdraw, or does the client no longer wish to have representation? I see my time has expired. Thank you, Your Honors, and to opposing counsel.
Any further questions?
No. Okay.
All right, thank you to both counsel for your helpful arguments here today. The matter is submitted and we will issue our opinion within the statutory time frame.